The Senate will please come to order, and the clerk will call the roll.
Atkinson.
Here.
Bates. Bates. Bonamici. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dinkfelder. Dinkfelder. Ferrioli. Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Haas. Haas. Johnson. Johnson. Cruz. Cruz. Metzger. Montez Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Brzozinski. Brzozinski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. President Courtney. President Courtney.
A quorum being present, we will post the colors, and the Pledge of Allegiance will be led by Senator Rosenbaum. Our invocation today is by Senator Joanne Berger.
Please be seated. My name is Faye Angus. My life was born out of harsh circumstances. The time was World War II, and the place was an internment camp in Yangchau, China, where my mother and I were detained as enemies. My father, a lieutenant with the Royal Navy, struggling through the desperate battle for Hong Kong, was captured and imprisoned there. I was 11 years old. It was my birthday. For heaven's sake, we didn't have anything. And it was my birthday. We didn't even have enough to eat. And then I felt the soft brush of a kiss on my forehead. It was my mother. And she said, "Happy birthday, darling." And there was something fuzzy in my hand. And I looked and it was an orange caterpillar. And he had a little brown head. And then she stuck my feet into shoes that were already too small, and she lifted me up on her frail, thin back, and she said, "Your carriage, my princess." And then, just like a ribbon dancer, she wove us through the prisoners that were still asleep and to the outside door, and then she looked up and said, "Faye, God is giving you a party. Look." And this beautiful sunrise was lifting, and all the clouds seemed to just dazzle in gold. She said, "Look, Faye, there are two morning stars. They're like candles. Blow them out." And I began to blow, and sure enough, they faded back into the aura. When I thought I had nothing to celebrate, my mother gave me everything in the gift of an awareness that my own small life was the center part of God's creation. She set my heart free, free of the wire and the walls that confined me, and lifted it to dance with the clouds of the highest of highs. For you see, she truly understood that the most genuine prayers of praising God are born out of the celebrating of an awareness of this world and our adventures in it. You will find prayers rolling out of bed or over the first cup of hot coffee or even a prayer for jogglers as they go by you. As the years go by, I have become enthralled with the many opportunities that God has given us to pass along the wonders and mystery of His creation and to all of those who follow us. I am Faye Angus. I ask you to join me today and celebrate and praise God for this wonderful creation together.
The Lynn Benton Community College Required Element Chamber Choir is here today, and they will sing Elijah Rock by Moses Hogan. our thanks. Our thanks to the Lynn Benton Community College Required Element for joining us today. Thank you very much. Our honorary pages today are Chelsea Queen, Nils Hagberg, Anna Weeks, Elizabeth Karen, and Matea Munstock, and they are here as guests of Senator Devlin. Megan Favor is here as a guest of Senator Morissette. Nadine Englund is serving us today as a guest of Senator Johnson. And Aaron Ward is here today serving us as a guest of Senator Prozonsky. Courtesies of the Senate. Remonstrances. Messages from the House.
Mr. President, do I speak from the House? Pass House Bill 2323, 2299, 2666, 2839, 2897, 3022, 3255, 3470, adopted HGM 12, 21, HGR 35. Concurrent Senate amendments and repass House Bill 2275. Speaker has signed House Bill 2433.
Reports from conference committees. Reports from standing committees. In accordance with SR 8.55 sub 1, committee report summary number 77 was distributed to members today. This information will be recorded in this journal and status report. So ordered. Senator Girard, for what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I ask that you return to courtesies, please.
Without objection, we'll return to the order of courtesies. Go ahead, Senator.
I would like to request that courtesies of the Senate be extended to Mrs. Bromley's fourth grade class. This group is here today visiting us from Sublimity Elementary School. Please join me in welcoming this group to their state capitol.
Thank you, Senator, and to all the good students joining us today, thank you for coming to your state capitol. We'll now return to our regular order of business, reports from special committees, propositions and motions, action on executive appointments requiring Senate confirmation, introduction and first reading of Senate measures, second reading of Senate measures.
SCR 12, in memoriam Thomas Paul Tennant, 1957-2008. SCR 13, offering support and encouragement to Woodburn Chief of Police Scott Delix Russell. SCR 14, in memoriam William Robert Hackham, 1957-2008. Senate Bill 543, with special motions to strike. Senate Bill 570, related commerce and metal property. Senate Bill 577, related certification of appeals to Supreme Court and declaring emergency. Senate Bill 970, related state real property.
Pass the calendar. Chair recognizes Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, Senate Democrats request a 20-minute caucus off the floor in their caucus room. 20.
Yes. Senator Farrelly, do you have an announcement?
Yes, Mr. President. We Republicans will also caucus for 20 minutes in our caucus room on the third floor.
Okay, the Senate will be in recess until 10 minutes till 11 o'clock. The Senate will please come to order. The clerk will call the roll.
Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dinkfelder, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Monzenderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Przonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney.
A quorum is present. The Senate recessed under the order of third reading of Senate measures and will resume under that order. So ordered. A reminder before we move to the third reading of Senate measures, there is a possibility, colleagues, the President wants to inform you that there is a possibility of evening sessions next week. Third reading of Senate measures. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 5, under the Adjunct General.
Chair recognizes President Courtney.
Senate Bill 5 is before you today with the unanimous support of committee. There is no dissenting opinions. Presently in the U.S. military, as you well know, there are four ranks of general. The Brigadier General, which is a one-star general. The Major General, two-star general, Lieutenant General, three-star, and then General, four-star. There are five-star generals. There's only been nine of them in the history of the country. There is no living five-star general. Congress has, for some time, considering elevating the head of all the all the National Guards in this country to an equivalent level of general, i.e. general, to say that it's on a par with the other levels of general. Up to now, the highest rank that the head of all the National Guards in the country can have is Lieutenant General. So Congress has elevated the head of the National Guards to a status of general, i.e. a four-star general. Presently, your National Guards in your respective states, i.e. Oregon, the highest rank of the leader of the Oregon National Air Guard is Adjutant General. Adjutant Generals is the highest rank. It's a statement of leadership on a state basis. Your National Guards, as you may know, are the Citizens Militia. Your National Guards are the oldest of all citizen militias in our country. They're older than even the National Forces. What this bill would do was elevate now the Adjutant General position in Oregon to a Lieutenant General position, a significant step, which is a statement to say that we share responsibilities with the federal government in dealing with the needs of our people in this state, as well as the needs of this people in the country, as well as should our country need those troops abroad. This is a significant piece of legislation because it does say that Oregon feels that its leader of its National Guard troops should be considered on a par with the working together with those in a national rank. And when the head of all the guards was moved to a general status, that allowed this position to be made a lieutenant governor position. There are five other states, Alaska, Georgia, Texas, and Maryland, that have taken this state. Oregon would become the sixth. I will be joined in a few moments by the good senator from Boquist, who will talk about the personal nature of this move in terms of Raymond Reese. It's a good piece of legislation. It is a piece of legislation that has been asked for by the governor's office. It is a position that is well in line with national policies as well as state policies, as well as the rank of general in our country. So I ask for a yes vote on Senate Bill 5.
Thank you, Mr. President. Chair recognizes Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thank you, Senator Courtney. As Paul Harvey says, now for the rest of the story. Just to give you a quick background here, in the military, in the active component, generally, a corps commander is a three-star general, a lieutenant general. And he's a corps commander because he has one or two divisions or larger underneath him. And that's how the active component works. In the National Guard, most states, and the states that were referenced by the good president, also have major subordinate commands underneath them. In the state of Oregon, we have a military department, and underneath it is the Air National Guard, the Army National Guard, the state militia, which is actually called the Oregon Guard, and our Department of Emergency Services and Homeland Security. The present incumbent and anybody who is in that seat really performs the functions of a lieutenant general today. The reason the other states have taken action and the reason it's appropriate that the state Senate should lead the action in the state of Oregon is another factor that most of you probably do not know. You always hear, let the generals decide, it's not a political decision. Unfortunately, ladies and gentlemen, that's not true. When you attain the rank of lieutenant colonel, you join the edge of the political fray in the most political organization in the United States, That's the Armed Forces of the United States. If you are politically acceptable, you get to the rank of colonel. Then what transpires is you are at the whim of the United States Senate and the politicians from there forward. Every single general officer in the active component must be approved by the United States Senate. And if you don't think it's a political process, you don't belong here on the floor of this chamber. Therefore, it is very appropriate for us to take action to recognize that the leadership we have in our state performs the same function of a lieutenant general in the active component. As the good president said, the active duty and the Congress have decided, in their humble opinion, that the Guard Bureau Chief may be a four-star general. Now to the man that we have here today, which I'm going to talk about briefly, because we're elevating the position, but I think it's merited. In 1962, Mr. Reese became Cadet Reese at West Point. When this goes across to the chamber on the far side, I think you will know that there's a lot of the members that aren't 46 years old. But General Reese has been in service for 46 years, longer than many of them in the other chamber have been alive. He started at West Point. He went to Vietnam. He was three times the Adjutant General of the state of Oregon. And here's the important piece. Had he been on active duty instead of a National Guard general, he would already be a three-star general because he serves as the Vice Chief of the National Guard Bureau for 5 years. Then he went on to serve as the Acting Chief of the National Guard Bureau, which is a four-star general position, which means he would be a four-star general today had he chosen to be on that side and they had chosen him. I think it is fitting that we have a general who has served for 46 years. We have a state structure that merits that of a lieutenant general, that we should not only recognize our position of leadership in the military side in the National Guard, but also recognize the humble service of this man who has given the nation and this state 46 years. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. Is there further discussion? If not, the question now arises on third reading and final passage of SB 5. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will answer aye. As their names are called, those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Ferrioli.
Aye.
George.
Aye.
Gerard.
Aye.
Haas.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Cruz.
Aye.
Metzger.
Aye.
Montes Anderson. Monroe.
Aye.
Morissette.
Aye.
Morse.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Przonski.
Aye.
Rosenbaum. Schrader,
aye.
Starr,
aye.
Telfer,
aye.
Berger,
aye.
Walker,
aye.
Whitsett,
aye.
Winters,
aye.
Atkinson,
yes.
Bates,
sir, yes, sir.
Bonamici,
aye.
Boquist,
aye.
Burdick,
aye.
Carter,
aye.
Devlin,
aye.
Dingfelder,
aye.
President Courtney,
yes.
30 ayes.
Senate Bill 5, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 103, relating to fees for contamination process searches and declaring emergency.
The chair recognizes Senator Dingfelder.
Thank you, Mr. President. Today we have before us Senate Bill 103, which is a streamlining measure that will enable the Department of Environmental Quality to implement new federal air quality regulations without requiring many small businesses to obtain permits. Since 1990, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has been working on regulations to reduce toxic air pollution from industry. Until recently, most companies subject to these new federal rules were large businesses that were already required to obtain air quality permits. The federal government now is turning its attention to toxic emissions from smaller emission sources, many of which are small businesses that do not currently have air quality permits. Without this bill, several thousand small businesses in Oregon would have to obtain air quality permits for the first time. One of the small business groups that would have been affected by the new federal regulations is auto body refinishing shops. This was a request, actually, from these businesses for an alternative to air quality permitting that resulted in Senate Bill 103. Under this bill, DEQ may allow a business to simply register with the department and pay a registration fee rather than obtain a permit and pay a permit fee. This registration alternative is strictly voluntary. A business could always choose to obtain the full permit, but it's expected that many small businesses will choose to register because it involves a simpler process and the fee is usually less than the permit fee. During the work session on this bill, two amendments were added to ensure that this new alternative works as intended. First, a registration fee may only be charged to a business that would have otherwise had to obtain a permit and pay a permit fee. In other words, the registration process contained in this bill is strictly an alternative to an already required permit. Second, we added a provision to prevent double fees on any business. If a business has a permit and pays a permit fee, it cannot also be charged a registration fee. With these above mentioned amendments, the bill passed out of the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee without objection from business groups such as the Association of Oregon Industries, from which I've distributed a floor letter in support of the bill, the Northwest Pulp and Paper Association, and the American Forest and Paper Association, all were in support of the bill. I want to emphasize that this bill authorizes an alternative to an existing fee and does not authorize fees on any business that isn't already subject to a permit fee. This bill, Senate Bill 103, creates a simpler alternative to permitting for Oregon's many small businesses, and I urge your support for this streamlining bill.
Thank you, Senator. Is there further discussion? If not, the question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 103A. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will answer aye. Their names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
George. Gerard. Hass. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger.
Aye.
Montes-Anderson. Montes-Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Przonski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, President Courtney, voting no. Atkinson, Boquist, Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Cruz, Morse, Nelson, Starr, Telfer, Whitsett, Winters, 18 ayes.
Senate Bill 103A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 118, with a delegation of authority within the Oregon Justice System.
Chair recognizes Senator Hass.
Thank you, Mr. President. Over the past 4 years, the State Board of Higher Education has taken steps to increase efficiencies in its decision-making. SB 118 is another step in that direction. Currently, the Oregon University System is governed by the State Board of Higher Ed, as we all know, which hires the chancellor and governs the committees and institutions. SB 118 specifically addresses and delegates the responsibilities of the chancellor and three of the four committees, the Academic Strategy Committee, the Finance and Administration Committee, and the Governance and Policy Committee. Under this bill, the chancellor's additional responsibilities will include spending limitation changes to capital projects, sale of certificates of participation when authorizations exist, tax-deferred or supplemental retirement plans, authorization to award honorary degrees with approval from institutional presidents. It should be noted now that the board already is directed to delegate some of its powers to the chancellor's office in ORS 351-210. This bill deletes parts of that section and replaces it with clearer lines of responsibility. What it does not do is change policy for board authorization to set tuition, adopt administrative rules, approve legislative concepts, approve budgets or hiring of the chancellor and university presidents. All of those things remain under the purview of the board. This will provide welcome clarity to the board. It determines which of its specific authorities, particularly those of a transactional nature, can be delegated to a board committee or the chancellor or the OUS presidents. It was brought by the Board of Higher Education and, as I mentioned, is already authorized to delegate much of its workload. The real goal here, colleagues, is to provide board members and put them on top of the larger policy considerations of our colleges and universities and not let them get buried in an avalanche of minutiae having to do with retirement plans, surplus property, or vendors. In the name of efficiency and streamlining, I ask for your support of Senate Bill 118.
Thank you, Senator. Is there further discussion? If not, the question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 118A. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will answer aye as their names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Gerard. Hass.
No.
Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Brzezinski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. President Courtney.
Yes.
Excused. Atkinson. Voting no. Boquist. Ferrioli. Girard. Johnson. Metzger. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. 19 ayes.
Senate Bill 118A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 171, relating to fiscal hazards and air navigation.
Chair recognizes Senator Johnson.
Thank you. Colleagues, recently the Department of Aviation was forced to reduce the flight pattern along the southern border of the Wasco State Airport due to the construction of towers. These hazards to air navigation should have never been built so close to the Wasco State Airport. Current statute allows the director of the Oregon Department of Aviation to define which objects and/or structures may be considered to be hazards to air navigation. But no process actually authorizes the director to prevent construction of structures hazardous to air navigation. SB 171A attempts to fix that. Senate Bill 171 prohibits construction of physical hazards to air navigation as determined by the Oregon Department of Aviation in coordination with local land use jurisdictions. Senate Bill 171 also directs the Director of Aviation to establish standards for mitigating hazards to air navigation and to require that airports take actions to mitigate hazards to air navigation.
Thank you, Senator. Are you not finished?
Mr. President, I would also like to declare a potential conflict of interest. I've been involved with the aviation industry for more than three decades. My husband owns property at an airport, and that airport potentially could be affected by this important safety issue.
Thank you, Senator. Your conflict will be noted for the record. Is there further discussion? If not, the question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 171A. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will answer aye as their names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Hass. Hass. Johnson. Cruz. Cruz. Metzger. Montes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Brzezinski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Girard. President Courtney.
Yes.
Excused. Atkinson, 29 ayes.
Senate Bill 171A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 225, when alcohol-related offenses by persons that are 21 years old.
Yeah. Chair recognizes Senator Whitsett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 225 was requested by the Attorney General's Underage Drinking Task Force and comes from the Judiciary Committee with unanimous consent. Currently, courts are required to suspend driving privileges for a minor convicted of attempting to purchase or possess alcohol. This bill would require that the court suspend the driving privileges, if any, for anyone between the ages of 13 and 21 if they fail to appear before the court for these charges. This would be in addition to the existing penalties that include Class A violations, Class B violations, or possible community service, and would serve as a further deterrent to underage drinking. This bill also clarifies that the age is determined at the time of the citation and not at the time of the conviction. By doing this, the courts can avoid having a 20-year-old wait until they turn 21 before appearing in court or having their charges dropped. The bill has no revenue and no fiscal impact. I urge an aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there further discussion? If not, the question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 225A. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will answer aye as their names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call a roll.
Johnson. Cruz. Cruz. Metzger. Montes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Brzezinski.
Rosenbaum. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dinkfelder. Ferrioli. George. Girard.
There's your carrier.
Girard. Haas. President Courtney. Excused. Atkinson, 29 ayes.
Senate Bill 225A, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 262, relating to courts.
Chair recognizes Senator Prozonsky.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Senate Bill 262 came out of your Judiciary Committee on a 5-0 vote. Specifically, what this bill is going to do is address the casework load that the Oregon Court of Appeals has. It should be noted for the record that our Court of Appeals is the busiest state intermediate court of appeals in the nation based on the number of filings per judge that handles these cases. What we're going to be doing is streamlining the ability for our court to be able to handle the caseload that they have without having the financial impact that currently is expected. So basically, the three things will be accomplished. It will allow for the option to have two judge panels to hear cases. Second, to increase the number of pro tem judges that can be on a panel, and also will allow the court to have the discretion on whether or not to grant de novo review on any or certain type of appeals that come before it. I urge your aye vote.
Is there further discussion? If not, Senator Prozonsky, do you wish to close? He does not. The question now arises upon the third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 262. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should be passed will answer aye as their names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Cruz. Cruz. Metzger. Montes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse, Nelson, Prozonsky, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Whitsett, Winters, Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Haas, Johnson, President Courtney, excused, Atkinson, voting no, George, Girard, 27 ayes.
Senate Bill 262, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 274, relating to the Ministry of Law Judges.
The chair recognizes Senator Prozonsky. The chair recognizes Senator Whitsett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My perception of the lack of due process in our administrative law hearings led me to request the Office of Administrative Hearing Oversight Committee to be revived. As no good deed goes unpunished, I was the first legislator appointed to that committee. After meeting for more than 2 years with the committee, and after individual meetings with more than a third of the Oregon's administrative law judges, and after several meetings with both the former chief ALJ and the director of the Department of Employment, my concerns have multiplied. Concerns expressed by the administrative law judges included the lack of judicial independence, exposure to challenges with no cause resulting in intimidation by agencies, management problems including possible intimidation by management, lack of training, and so forth. Concerns expressed by the public include the lack of due process, the ability of the agency's boards and commissions to alter or reverse the ALJ's proposed orders, and the perceived lack of training of the ALJs. Some of those concerns have been addressed through the committee meetings. A new chief ALJ has been appointed. Better avenues of dialogue between ALJs and management have been created, and a program for better cross-training of ALJs has been introduced. Other concerns have not been addressed. The result was my introduction of Senate Bill 274. The original bill would have required that all ALJ's determination be final orders appealable to the Court of Appeals. They would have eliminated the no-cause challenge or recusal of an ALJ, would have required that all ex parte communications be disclosed, and would have prevented ALJs receiving training from an agency while ALJ was deliberating a case for that agency. Senate Bill 274A, as amended, addresses several of those issues. I want to thank Senator Prezansky for his leadership in moving this bill forward, and I urge your support for Senate Bill 274A. Thank you.
Chair recognizes Senator Prezansky.
Thank you, Madam President. Madam President, the good senator from District 28 and I got together. We took 274, made some changes to it to make certain that we could take care and address as many of the issues that he has raised and some of the perceptions that have been out there in the general public. I just want to go over just briefly what the amendments do as to what 274A provides. It will now allow for the governor to appoint the chief administrative law judge. That individual will serve at the pleasure of the governor. The Office of Administrative Hearings will maintain its position within the structure of the Employment Department building, and also will use the department for the support services that is necessary to run the office. But it is not an independent running office. It still has the attachment to the Employment the Department within their own building. Two points that are important to put on the record is that one is that the clear and convincing evidence standard will be required before an agency, board, commission, or whoever else is the finding authority before they can overturn the administrative law judge's historical finding of fact. Lastly, the Secretary of State's office is being folded into the area of where agencies, offices, departments, commissions, boards, and where there is a contested case that's going to be before an administrative law judge, those cases will in fact be handled within the Office of Administrative Hearings. Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you, Senator Prezansky. Is there further discussion? Senator Bonamici. The chair recognizes Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Madam President. Colleagues, first I want to start by thanking Senator Whitsitt for his involvement on the Office of Administrative Hearings Oversight Committee, on which I also serve. I know the senator has put a significant amount of time into that effort and to this bill with the chair of the Judiciary Committee. I wanted to talk a little bit about the whole notion of lack of judicial independence. This is a process that is designed to be administrative. It is not a judicial process. In fact, these administrative law judges were originally called hearings officers, and they are there to gather information for the agency and to take it back to the agency. It is not a judicial process, and I don't want to see it become a judicial process. Many steps were taken in this bill to make the Office of Administrative Hearings work better. I'm supporting the bill. I do support many of the changes, but I wanted to make that comment that I don't want to see administrative law become judicialized. I also had a concern about the relationship between the Office of Administrative Hearings and the Employment Division. That was addressed during our committee on the record, and I'm comfortable with that, but I do want to also state that in a perfect world where we had resources, the Office of Administrative Hearings would be separate from the Employment Division. It's housed there because of a compromise when the original Office of Administrative Hearings was begun, and someday I hope to see it separate from the Employment Department. So thank you, Madam President.
Thank you, Senator. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Whitsitt, do you wish to close? Senator Prezansky, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Madam President. I just want to put on the record we agree with the good senator as to the comments that from District 17 has made. I do want to put on the record that this is an executive branch area, that these hearings officers / hearings judges are in fact gathering facts and making determinations that's within the executive branch level of government. And that they do, in fact, either have final order authority from those agencies or whatever type of entity it is, or they report back for some final decisions. What we wanted to make certain is that those who do not have final authority in the sense of issuing an order do, in fact, have the ability to have their findings of historical facts to be respected unless there's clear and convincing evidence that overturns the finding that was made by those individuals. So with this, we believe it's a good fix.
for moving forward, and that we will expect that the oversight committee that both these senators are representing our body with will continue to review and give us insight back as to what, if anything else, needs to be done in the future. Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you, Senator Przanski. The question now arises upon the third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 274. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should be passed will answer aye as their names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Metzger, Mons Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morse, Nelson, Przanski, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Berger, Walker, Widsett, Winters, Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, George, Girard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz, President Courtney, 30 ayes.
Senate Bill 274, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 306, will undue attorney fees.
The chair recognizes Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Madam President. Colleagues, the purpose of Senate Bill 306 is to encourage the early settlement of small cases. And here's how it works. Current Oregon law allows a plaintiff to recover attorney's fees under a small contract and tort action by requiring a defendant to pay the attorney's fees if the plaintiff receives a judgment that's greater than the amount that was offered after receiving a formal written demand from plaintiff. The statute has served its purpose since its inception. For the last 10 years, however, small cases have been defined as those seeking $5,500 or less. Senate Bill 306 increases the amount to claims for $10,000 or less. This increase is justified on several grounds. First, the U.S. Department of Labor, Bureau of Labor and Statistics Consumer Price Index, and the U.S. Social Security Annual Cost of Living Adjustments both demonstrate that the cost of living has increased significantly since the ceiling was last increased. Senate Bill 306 adjusts the limit to today's dollars. Second, because of the attorney time necessary to interview a client, prepare and file a lawsuit, prepare and respond to pretrial or hearing discovery requests, and the preparation and attendance at a hearing or trial, litigation of claims of $10,000 or less is not feasible without an attorney fee provision. Consequently, valid cases may be abandoned. Finally, our neighboring state, Washington, has had a $10,000 ceiling for almost 25 years in a comparable statute, and that statute is working well to encourage settlement. Senate Bill 306 does not just raise that statutory demand level, however. To address concerns raised by the defense bar, particularly the Association of Defense Counsel, this bill also changes the required notice to the defendant from the current 10 days to 20 days to give the defendant more time to evaluate the claim. But it doesn't stop there. It also adds a provision that imposes an additional requirement that the plaintiff must provide supporting documentation about the claim to the defendant, and that includes any medical records or property damage records, if applicable, and it makes the obligation to turn over such records a continuing one. So instead of the existing statute where the defendant had 10 days to make a decision about whether they'd pay and to settle the case, now they have an additional time. That time is doubled, and they're getting information that will help them assess the claim. So here is the result. Overall, with Senate Bill 306, more cases will settle and fewer lawsuits will be filed. If a plaintiff makes an unreasonably high demand, he or she will not be awarded attorney's fees. If a defendant ignores a legitimate demand, he or she will be required to pay the claim plus attorney's fees that the plaintiff incurs in pursuing the claim. The net result, colleagues, is fewer cases filed and fewer cases going to trial. Colleagues, in committee, we heard from someone who has defended insurance companies for years. This person said that the statute works this way. He said it's reduced litigation by encouraging fair settlements of smaller claims. And recall, colleagues, that the similar statute in Washington has been working to encourage settlement for decades, reducing litigation and freeing up judicial resources. We have a floor letter from the Oregon Trialers Association and the Oregon Association of Defense Counsel urging support of Senate Bill 306 to reduce court congestion and costs while increasing judicial efficiency. I urge your aye vote on Senate Bill 306. Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you, Senator Bonamici. Is there further discussion? If not, Senator Bonamici, do you wish to close?
No, thank you, Madam President.
She does not. The question now arises upon the third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 306. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should be passed will answer aye as their names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Montes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Prozonsky. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Starr. Telfer.
No.
Berger.
Aye.
Walker. Whitsett. Winters.
No.
Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick.
Aye.
Carter.
Aye.
Devlin.
Aye.
Dingfelder. Ferrioli.
No.
George.
No.
Gerard. Haas. Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, President Courtney, voting no, Atkinson, Boquist, Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Cruz, Morse, Nelson, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Whitsett, Winters, 17 ayes.
Senate Bill 306, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
Senate Bill 556, when AEDs.
The chair recognizes Senator Haas.
Thank you, Madam President. I think I might need permission to use a visual aid.
Senator Haas requests unanimous consent for permission to use a visual aid. Without objection, please proceed.
Madam President, what I have here on my excuse me. What I have here on my desk is an automatic external defibrillator. Put up on pause. Doctors say it's the only device that can save lives in a cardiac arrest. It's a machine that delivers an electric shot to the heart in order to stop irregular heart, known as arrhythmia. The shock sets the heart back to a normal rhythm. And without this correction, as many of you know, blood will not flow to the brain. Brain damage will occur. Eventually, the person will die. I've been working on this issue since 2000 when a 7-year-old boy was pulled out of a swimming pool in Beaverton with cardiac arrest and he died. Present at that swimming pool were two lifeguards and two doctors. One was a cardiac surgeon. One of the doctors said later, we didn't need four people, we needed one AED. 3 weeks ago on the campus of Oregon State University, they did have an AED. At the right place at the right time. And thanks to a few quick-thinking students and one AED, there's an OSU professor who survived and is living today. According to the American Heart Association, 325,000 Americans die each year from sudden cardiac arrest. More than 95% of them who go into cardiac arrest die before reaching the hospital or having access to one of these. And this bill before you today seeks to reduce that number by putting AEDs in all buildings larger than 50,000 square feet. To give you perspective on that size, one block, a full city block on one story, is a building the size of about 40,000 square feet. So these are not small buildings. As you might note in the bill, churches and schools are exempt. We've been working since 2005 to raise money for schools, to get more of them into schools, and that work is continuing. I've worked with business groups for more than a year on this bill, and you might be surprised to learn that cost was not an issue with them. AEDs cost between about $1,000 and $1,500. Their concern was liability. So in this bill, we strengthened Oregon's current Good Samaritan law so that managers and owners of buildings are granted full immunity if something goes wrong when an AED is used. And that's all they wanted. And because that was put in this bill, it is supported by the Oregon Building Owners and Management Association. Colleagues, I've used one of these in an emergency situation. and it worked. There was a man in front of me without a pulse, turning purple and not breathing. And after an electrical charge administered by an AED, he came back to life. Literally came back to life. They work. They are the fire extinguishers of the 21st century. And like fire extinguishers, they may not be used very often, but when they're needed, they'll save lives. Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you, Senator Hess. Further discussion? Senator Bates.
Thank you, Madam President. This is an especially important bill for us to pass today. It's a real step forward for us. Automatic external defibrillators, I would offer, are extremely easy to use. We actually placed this in front of a fifth grade class one day and said, what is this for? The kids figured it out in about 5 minutes. And we had not told them a thing about what it was for. It's that easy to use. We have several in this building now on our floors. There's one right outside here. And you'll see it sitting next to the fire extinguisher if you ever have to look for it really quickly. Senator Hass has had a personal experience with it, as I've had it done, but not quite the same way. Ours were planned, stand back, and we gave him a few more volts than you get with the AED. But his was here in this building. When I came here in 2000, I was surprised to find this building had no AEDs in it, and we put some in. And that's one of the ones that you used to save your friend's life. This is something that I've wanted for a long time in our community. It was pioneered in Seattle, Washington, where people actually were carrying them around over their shoulder for a long time. It's gone across the country now. The first responders are available with them. You'll often see in gatherings and groups outside, county fairs, a place like that, they'll be hanging around the EMTs who are there at the time when a large group of people are together. This bill does not require that to happen. It automatically happens because people bring these in. But there's holes in our system here. The holes are large business buildings, which this bill takes care of. And the other big hole, quite frankly, is our K-12 system. Our junior high schools and high schools have not got these yet because of cost. You've heard, I'm sure, of young athletes who die suddenly taking part in sports. The vast majority of those people die because of what we call ventricular fibrillation, the arrhythmia this takes care of. This is what will save those lives. We are hoping that at the end of session we will see a bill come through, which will be a capital bill for schools. A de minimis amount of money of that bill, I'm going to ask, be placed in an account so that junior high schools and high schools of appropriate size can buy these for their schools and have them available. Having done that, we will have, I think, closed the gap as well as you can in an imperfect world to try to save these lives. I would ask for a strong aye vote for this. And Senator Hass, thank you for your hard work on this to get this bill just right. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Bates. Further discussion, Senator Farrioli.
Thank you, Madam President. Will the carrier yield to a question, please?
Will the carrier yield to a question?
Yes.
He will.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm curious about the definition of the word congregate. Congregate might mean an aggregate of 25 persons at one place at one time, maybe. Or it could mean a business that serves 25 people in the course of a day. And I'd like a clarification on that issue, Madam President.
I'll do my best. The word congregate was used as a word to gather or be at. The level of 25 was put in there so as to not put an undue burden on warehouses or storage facilities in which there may be this square footage, but only a few people. It is where people gather, and I think it is what it is. It is to congregate.
A further question, Madam President?
Additional question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes.
He does.
As I read the bill, Madam President, it's either or. It's either 50,000 square feet or 25 persons. Am I reading that correctly?
Yes.
A further question, Madam President?
Additional question. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, and I would check that previous answer that it's not either, it's or.
Madam President, the bill appears to me to apply to any business that serves 25 people per day, because you could argue that people would congregate at a Dairy Queen, for instance. They might also congregate individually, but in the aggregate of 25 people in a day, at a dentist's office. So I'm just curious, Madam President, if we have any clarification on congregate, is it 25 persons at one place at one time, or is it 25 people over the course of a day who at different times but congregate at the location? Thank you, Madam President.
The answer is this is where business activities are conducted, and at least 25 individuals congregate on a normal business day, whether they come in one every hour or whether it's a dentist's office with 50,000 square feet. That's how you get to your 25.
Madam President, I would submit to the bill, Madam President.
To the bill.
I would submit that the proper reading of this bill is 50,000 square feet or any business, any public place that serves 25 people a day. And, Madam President, I would suggest to you that the number of institutions, businesses, and public places of congregation that will be affected by this bill includes every business in Oregon that serves 25 persons in a day. Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you, Senator Farrioli. Further discussion, Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam President. To the bill, and maybe I can shed some light on this, because this was a product that went to a work group. The 50,000 square feet was a clear and distinct barrier that we chose not to go below. So it's a rather significant size structure. But as we were exploring that, what we discovered was that would also include, as you drive up and down I-5, you can see to the east and to the west hay barns and other structures like that clearly are of that size and scope. And it was not the intention to require a defibrillator to be placed inside a hay barn, because very seldom do bales of hay have problems with their hearts. So it was because of that, Madam President, that we chose to put in the bill the 25 individuals who congregate, to make sure that we are not dealing with hay barns, we are not dealing with equipment sheds, but we are dealing with a significant size and scope of business that actually has people at it. And I do not think this is an either or. I think this is setting a limit on size, and it is setting a limit on people. I think this is a good addition to the bill. I urge an aye vote.
Thank you, Senator Cruz. Is there further discussion? Senator Montes-Anderson.
Thank you, Madam President. I didn't realize that the good Senator Cruz was going to address this issue, but this was strictly for a facility that has 50,000 square feet, and then if it has 25 people who would congregate. But it's the facility of 25. We did discuss this in committee. Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you, Senator Montes-Anderson. Is there further discussion? Senator Atkinson.
Thank you very much, Madam President. Madam President, I wasn't prepared to speak on this bill, but I think the issue here is the larger policy, which is, should these be readily available? And as we move forward after this bill passes, will there perhaps need to be changes to the bill? And the answer might be yes. Just a few weeks ago, I was giving a speech out front of the Capitol, and there was several thousand people there. And one of the people who was with me that day, I got a call late that night that during that event, the person had chest pains. And later that night, I was in the emergency room with that person and with their family as they went off to the cardiac care center for the next couple of nights. The fact of the matter is that we don't know when things like this happen. And the fact of the matter is that when we take an oath of office, we actually, part of that oath is doing our very best to serve people. And if we can, by the action of an aye or a nay vote, serve someone and save their life, the larger public policy issue is it worth it? That's really what we're talking about. Does this bill might need to be fixed in a couple of years? It could. I mean, certainly some of the better work that we've done as an institution of the Senate has been that way. But the larger public policy before us here and the product of a work group and the product of the committee is, are these, should these be readily available as much as possible in Oregon? And the answer is yes. The answer is yes, even within the confines of our beloved Capitol building. Even to grassroots groups that come here, maybe very angry, maybe very supportive, but this is their building, and if somebody here should need that equipment, would we have it readily available? And the answer is yes. I would urge an aye vote.
Thank you, Senator Atkinson. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Senator Hass, do you wish to close?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam President. Thank you for this discussion. I do want to just clarify one thing from the good senator from John Day, that if he takes a careful read of Senate Bill 556, he will see that Section 1, place of public assembly with 50,000 square feet, is the first requirement. And then there are the following requirements in the subsections. And the definition of congregate is a group assembled, not to differentiate among other groups. It is to gather. I very much thank you, the committee, chaired by the good senator from Gresham, for improving this bill from its original form, and very much salute the businesses who stood behind this too, as well, as because I think we all need know that we are addressing something that we have now the modern technology to address, and this bill takes us a step in that direction.
Thank you, Senator Hess. The question now arises upon the third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 556. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will answer aye as their names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will read the roll.
Monroe.
Aye.
Morissette.
Aye.
Morse.
Aye.
Nelson.
Aye.
Prozonsky.
Aye.
Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Schrader.
Aye.
Starr.
Aye.
Telfer.
No.
Verger.
Aye.
Walker.
Aye.
Whitsett. Winters.
Aye.
Atkinson.
Yes.
Bates. Bonamici.
Aye.
Boquist.
Aye.
Burdick.
Aye.
Carter.
Aye.
Devlin.
Aye.
Dingfelder. Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Hass, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Von Zinderson, President Courtney, voting no, Johnson, Telfer, 28 ayes.
Senate Bill 556, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Senator Verger.
Thank you, Madam President. I request to return to order of courtesies.
Senator Verger requests unanimous consent to return to the order of courtesies without objection. Please proceed.
Madam President, I'd like to welcome Terry Sue Fisher here in the Capitol today, who is the mother of my assistant, Joel Fisher, and lives in Senator Margaret Carter's district. Terry Sue is here today to watch us pass Senate Bill 556. Her husband, Joel's father, died from cardiac arrest in an area that did not have an AED on hand, but will after the passage of this bill. So please extend courtesies to Terry Sue, and I'm happy to have her here with us today.
Thank you, Senator Verger, and welcome. Courtesies are extended. Without objection, the remaining Senate measures will be carried over to their proper place on tomorrow's April 29th calendar. Without objection, so ordered. First reading of House measures. Pardon me? Senator Ferrioli.
Thank you, Madam President.
Further courtesies, please proceed.
No, Madam President.
Senator Ferrioli, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Madam President. For without objection, Madam President, to return briefly to remonstrance.
Senator Ferrioli requests permission to return to the order of remonstrances. Without objection, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam President. I won't take the 2 minutes. I just wanted to point out to colleagues and members that on your desk is an editorial from the Bend Bulletin, April 27, 2009, entitled The Ugly Wake of the Metolius Ban. and it discusses the principles that have been slain in the process. Please take a moment to read the editorial from Bend. Thank you, Madam President.
Thank you, Senator Farioli. Further remonstrances? First reading of House measures.
HJM 12, urging Congress to enact legislation that increasing veterans' access to health care. HJM 21, urging Congress to change funding in veterans' health care from discretionary entitlement to permanent direct entitlement. HJR 35, expressing support for findings of report issued by Federal Forest Lands Advisory Committee. House Bill 2053, relating to civil penalties. House Bill 2299, retention facilities. House Bill 2666, relating to perinatal mental health disorders and current emergency. House Bill 2839, relating to domestic partnership. House Bill 2897, with placement of children in protective custody. House Bill 3022, relating to treatment of sexually transmitted diseases. House Bill 2235, relating to emergency response times. House Bill 3470, relating to veterans and prescribing effective date.
Transmitted to President's desk for referral. Second reading of House measures. Third reading of House measures. The clerk will read the bill. Without objection, the House measures remaining on today's third reading list will be carried over to tomorrow, April 29th calendar. So ordered. Other business of the Senate. In accordance with Senate Rule 8403, committee referral list number 99 was distributed to the members April 27th. The referrals will be recorded in the journal and status report, so ordered. Announcements. Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Madam President. The Republicans will caucus upstairs on the third floor. Please, members, get your lunch and repair immediately to the third floor. We have guests today.
Thank you, Senator Farioli. Further announcements, Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Madam President. Colleagues, Senate Democrats will not caucus today, but Senate Democratic leadership will meet at 12:20.
Thank you, Senator Devlin. Further announcements? If there are no further announcements and without objection, the Senate is adjourned until 10:15 a.m. Wednesday, April 29th.